Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, a podcast all about tabletop role-playing games from the perspective of the captain's chair. Ben Yendel joins me on the show today to discuss the Star Wars RPG system by Fantasy Flight Games. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener and fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 26 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Before I get into it today, I want to give a huge shout out and thank you to Derek Pounds for becoming our new patron of the show over on Patreon. So if you enjoy the podcast and you'd like to help support the show and support Starwalker Studios, you can head on over to patreon.com/GameMaster's Journey and become a patron of the show. So thank you very much, Derek. I really appreciate it. I've got a great show for you today. As I said at the top, Ben Yendel is joining us. He is one of the hosts of the Tales from the Hydean Way podcast, and he is coming on to talk about Star Wars with me, specifically the Star Wars role-playing games from Fantasy Flight Games. So those are Edge of the Empire, Age of Rebellion, and The Imminent Force and Destiny. So I've got a lot of great content for you in this interview. It's going to be a two-parter again, so we will be wrapping up the interview next week in episode 27. So without further ado, here's Ben. Ben Yendel is joining me on the show today. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you for having me.
Ben is one of the hosts of the Tales from the Hydean Way, a Star Wars RPG podcast that I'm a big fan of. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your show, Ben?
The show itself is about how to do a Star Wars theme to a role-playing game using the Fantasy Flight system.
Okay.
And yeah, trying to figure out the best way of implementing a story for the system.
Awesome.
And the system just sort of jumps out story.
Yeah, and it's a great podcast, even if you're not playing that particular game, because you guys have a lot of episodes that are really just more general, you know, how to handle certain things as a GM and how to be a good GM.
Well, they show up for almost any sort of role-playing game that you're in, whether it's anything from Fate to Traveler. You're going to run into fairly common things, like how do you deal with high-end players? How do you deal with beginner players?
Yeah.
How do you get buy-in from anyone?
Yeah, totally. I'm excited to have you on because I've really been wanting to talk about Fantasy Flight Games, Star Wars games. I played the West End Star Wars, the D6 way back when. I played both of, I think there were two D20 versions.
Well, like D&D with those editions, there was the 3.5 edition for Star Wars, so kind of three editions.
Yeah. Now, was that the Saga edition, or was that a different one?
No, it went 3, which was just when Wizards got the license, went to RCR, which is the one, if you're doing the old school Wizards 1, it's RCR, which is 3.5, and then Saga edition.
Okay.
Which is, I'm hesitant to say, but it's kind of related to 4th edition D&D.
Okay.
It doesn't have as much of the, this class has this stuff, it's got a lot more general feats and talents.
Okay, cool. I dabbled in those a little bit. I played the West End games one quite a bit, and I ran it too. And I got a hold of Edge of the Empire, and I really, really liked what I saw. I ran the starter box adventure or the beginner box, and that's my only experience with it. So I really wanted to get someone on a show that knows more about the game. And I listen to your podcast, so I'm really happy that you could come on tonight.
Well, I'm very glad to be here and talk about it. It's a system that I really like and love spreading my love of it.
So I think we'll just assume that the listener doesn't really know anything.
Okay.
And so I guess the most basic kind of starting point is character creation. So how do characters work in this game? We don't really have a class system like we did in the D20 versions, right?
No, it is much more freeform. You do have a career that your character starts in, and for each of the three main thrusts of the role-playing system,
okay,
whether it's being smugglers, being major parts of the rebellion, or just coming out a force user, you've got six different careers to deal with. And this is sort of the very basic archetype of what the character is.
Okay.
Whether you're a colonist, a technician, or a smuggler, it's a very basic description that a lot of the specializations that you get color in many different ways.
Okay, cool. So some of your careers are like smuggler and pilot and things like that. Is that right?
For Edge of the Empire, you've got bounty hunter, smuggler, colonist, technician, and each of them is subdivided into, in the core book, into three specializations.
Okay.
And then they're releasing splat books as they come up.
Okay.
So the career has a set skill list that you're choosing from, and then you're choosing the specializations within it, at least for a starting character.
Okay. And then there are also, it's been a while since I played, but I don't know if these are the specializations, but I think it's the specializations where they're not, there are some like the one where you can use the force in Edge of the Empire that isn't tied to a particular class or a particular career, and anybody can take those, right?
Yeah, they've got universal specializations. In Edge of the Empire, it's the single force using specialization, where you can't take that at character creation as your first specialization, but you can take it as a second one.
Okay.
So at least in Edge, to be a force user is an active choice that you're paying experience into to get.
Right. So I guess maybe we should take a step back and mention, first of all, that these games are taking place during the time period of the original movies, episodes 4, 5, and 6, right?
Yes. Structure-wise, they're taking place somewhere between episodes 4 and 5.
Okay, okay.
So the Death Star has blown up. The rebels, if you're part of them, the main base is on Hoth. The fleet is bouncing around. And all in all, things look hopeful, but pretty bleak still.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great time.
It really is.
And then there are, well, there's going to be three games, right? So there's Edge of the Empire, which is the one I'm familiar with.
Which is the smuggler, it's sort of the smuggler criminal underworld base of Star Wars, where you've got the Hutts,
yeah,
Black Sun, and all the really nefarious beings.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really cool setting, and one that, if they had released books a different way or in a different order, it would have been it probably would have been just overlooked.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And it is so Star Wars. It's 2 years on, I'm still coming back to the book and it is still engaging for me.
Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, my experience with the earlier games like West Ends and the Wizards of the Coast versions, you know, if you wanted to have an adventure like what you can have in Edge of the Empire, you'd kind of have to say, okay guys, you can only make these types of characters.
Yeah.
You know, and if you just let people do whatever, like you couldn't have that. And that's one thing I really like about it. Like for me, I really like, I don't have a whole lot of interest in the second one, Age of Rebellion. When I heard about Edge of the Empire, I was just like, oh my God, this is the game for me. Like, this is the part of Star Wars I really like. And here's a game that focuses on that, which I thought was really cool.
That's one of the nice parts about it, is that if this is a area that you like, you can go for that. You don't have to get Age of Rebellion or Force and Destiny. You can just go with Edge of the Empire.
Yeah.
And if there's something that may show up in another book, like, well, Interdictor Cruisers, because smugglers.
Yeah.
They show up in the Age of Rebellion core book.
Okay.
But then they show up in the Smuggler Splat book.
Oh, okay.
So that if you need something, it will be in the line.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually wondered about that. I was like, if I'm really into this game, am I going to want to buy the Age of Rebellion book just for like some of the ships and equipment and stuff?
There are some things that show up, but if you're wanting that stuff, usually you've got that sort of mindset anyway.
Right.
Like, if you're wanting to be using all the TIE fighters and sort of secondary ships from the TIE fighter and X-Wing games, they're all showing up in the Age of Rebellion Ace specialization book.
Oh, okay.
But unless you're going to be doing that style of campaign, chances are you're not really needing it because you've got TIEs and that sort of thing already in Edge of the Empire.
Right.
Like, if you're wanting the more esoteric stuff, then you start drilling down and spending a bit more money.
Yeah.
Ace stuff, it's all in the Edge line where you don't really need to jump to a different stream.
Cool. And then Age of Rebellion is your more like Rebellion versus the Empire kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, it's very much Rebellion versus Empire, where one of the specializations is just the ace, where you've got a pilot, a driver, like a starfighter gunner, and a career completely based around that. You've got a combat trooper, which is specifically a combat trooper that has a sniper, a commando, and even a combat medic based around it, where it's still a complete party dynamic, but it's much more focused on being in the Rebellion and being effective in a Rebellion style adventure.
Okay, cool. And then the third one, which isn't quite out yet, Force and Destiny, is all about Jedi, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it, like, I've looked at the beta for it. I've been getting as much info on it as I can, and it's very Force-based. Not so much Jedi, per se, but...
Oh, okay.
Like, there isn't really a Jedi specialization or career. All of the careers in it do come with direct access to the Force, but you are losing some career skills to get it.
Okay.
It's a kind of cool way of balancing things out.
Yeah.
And with each of the three different lines, there is a storytelling mechanic based around it. With Edge of the Empire, you've got the obligation mechanic, which is essentially the debts that your character has incurred that are too big to ever just run away from.
Right.
They will catch up.
Yeah.
Whereas in Age of Rebellion, you have a duty mechanic, which is almost the inverse of the obligation mechanic, where this is what you're fighting for. This is sort of your main true ideal for the Rebellion or the group that you're fighting for. And in Force and Destiny, you have a morality mechanic where it's trying to look at, like, it isn't so much a this is good, this is bad, but this is a selfish way of interacting with this particular aspect of your character, and this is a very generous way of dealing with it.
Okay, cool. I really like the obligation mechanic in Edge of the Empire, and if I remember right, when you're making your character, it's kind of like a point buy kind of thing where you can get different skills and abilities and stuff, and you can actually get more points to spend or maybe get more money or equipment when you start out by taking on a higher level of obligation. And then the GM makes like kind of like a chart, and every session you roll on that to see whose obligation might come into play that session. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty close to it.
Okay.
The obligation is, it's essentially part of your character's background, especially your starting obligation. And it gets worked in as this is sort of the big reason for what's changed to propel you into the party. Like, whether you're in debt to a hut or on the run from these bounty hunters. And if you're rolling on this table and your number comes up at the start of the session, well, during the session, something from that is going to be showing up, whether it's a small side encounter for a bounty hunter showing up trying to collect on you, or just having a hut's representative show up asking for their money or asking for assurances that you're going to get it. And this preys upon the mental reserves of the character, making it so that they aren't as resilient.
Okay, Cool. Now, one thing that I noticed going from the D6 Star Wars to the D20 Star Wars was D20 went with the classic like D&D like class and level kind of system.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like it really worked with Star Wars. I didn't feel like it worked kind of cramming characters into these classes. And when looking at these games, it seems like you can really start with this concept and build that character. Is that your experience with it?
That's exactly my experience with it. The careers kind of speak to me as the very base kind of classes.
Yeah.
So you know that your character is a technician, a smuggler, a explorer, a pirate gun. And from this, that's sort of the base archetype. And with this, you get a few traits, or in this case, skills. And then you're taking your specialization, which hones everything in. And with the specialization, you get access to all these different talents. And it's how you use these talents to create your character. And these talents allow something on a die roll to give you a benefit or a negative. And the dice in the system are much more integral to how the story is being told.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the dice a little bit. This is probably one of the biggest innovations, it seems like to me, in the system, because we're seeing polyhedrals like we're used to, D8, D12, D6, D10, but they don't have numbers on them. They've got like these cool little symbols on them instead.
Yeah, and because they've got different symbols on them, it isn't just a single success failure axis anymore.
Okay.
You have the ability to succeed and fail, but you also have something that is good or bad happen that is related to the task, but not specifically of the task.
Okay.
So say you're searching for information doing a computer hack, and you fail on that, but you've got a lot of advantage. And getting this advantage allows you to get other information that is still useful to you, providing, say, security layouts when you're looking for specific information on troop movements. So it's related, but not exactly what you're looking for.
Okay, cool.
And then there's sort of a third axis, which is where things get a little odd, where you can have the essentially amazingly good things or amazingly bad things happen. Triumph or despair. And with it, you can have any of the advantage stuff happen, which is criticals to bonus dice to even upgrading your next roll to having just sort of plot stuff show up, such as, yes, I find exactly what I'm looking for and it's better than what I was hoping. Something along that lines. Or with the despair, you can have it that I'm doing this hack on the computer and I trigger the local military base to come investigate, and we've got a couple rounds or a couple minutes to get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something really, really good or really, really bad. And those ones are only showing up on particular dice. If it's just a normal difficulty with going against your normal attribute, then little of the really cool stuff is happening.
Right, because you're getting some dice from like a basic attribute, and then some are coming from your skill in whatever the thing is, and then there are other dice that are like complications or whatever.
Yeah, the way it basically works out is you have an attribute and you have a skill that you're applying to this attribute. Whichever one's smaller, that's how many proficiency dice you get.
Okay.
The difference between the two is how many ability dice you get to add on to it. So say you've got a ability of 4 and a skill of 2.
Okay.
You get 2 proficiency dice and 2 ability dice. But the fun part to it, or at least fun for me, is say you've got an ability of 2 and a skill of 4. You still get the same roll. So you can be really trained, but just kind of inept at it. And you can be as good as someone who's really good at it, but barely trained.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the nuances to the system that I think is really cool is you can even go a little deeper when you're interpreting that role, and you can say, well, I got successes from my skill dice, but I got a complication from my attribute dice. And so this is how I'm going to interpret what happens, because, well, my skill got me through it, but yet I'm not very good at this particular attribute, so that kind of held me back a little bit and caused like something not great to happen even though I succeeded.
That's a really fun part to it, is because with all of these dice, you've got a good idea of where all these dice are coming from, even from the difficulty end of it. You've got just straight difficulty, which is the same kind of dice as your ability.
Right.
And any of the things that are, like, say this is a nemesis that is a huge adversary, and it's upgrading two of the dice that are going against you. Now, it's almost like you're rolling skill against skill, but it's the player rolling.
Right, right.
And from that, you can tell, well, this big bad's skill is the part that has confounded me, whereas the lighting flickering on and off is a part that caused me to actually fail the roll.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that's something, I guess, to point out too, is that you're, instead of rolling against a number, your difficulty is a number of dice that you're rolling that are kind of canceling out the successes that you get.
Exactly. You've got, on the positive side, you have successes, advantage, and triumphs.
Okay.
And on the bad side, you have failures, threat, and despair. And failures cancel successes, and threat cancels advantage. And triumph and despair just show up. So you can have a triumphant despair.
Nice.
And both of them showing up off of the same roll. So you can successfully do something really awesome, and then accidentally blow that thing up. Just getting exactly what you need from it, but you can never do something else to it after.
So this brings me to a question that I've really been wanting to ask someone that has some more experience with the game, because like I said, I just ran the starter adventure. We played it like two sessions. So I don't really feel like I ever really got proficient with it. But one thing, and all my players had never played the game before, so we were all totally new. And one thing that I noticed when we were playing is someone would roll and we'd all kind of look at these dice and then figure out what they meant. And it seemed a little slow, but I imagine that, like, once you have a table full of people that know the system and, you know, you're really proficient, that it gets faster.
It does. It gets a lot faster.
Okay, cool.
There are tables that you can look to for reference to get base ideas of where to go for mechanical end of things.
Okay.
To advantage can mean getting a boost die on someone's next roll, or a setback to an enemy.
Right,
something
right.
Like that. And within a couple sessions, you sort of internalize that. The fun part to it is then describing why.
Right.
You're shooting at this guy, and from this scrying pool that I've just rolled, what comes out of it? Okay, I hit, and I'm now taking a setback die because I've got a huge amount of threat. So I hit the guy, but my rifle then jumps up and hits me, causing me to get a little woozy for my next round.
Cool.
You do get a lot more proficient with it. And a lot of the mechanic stuff can be, or it becomes fairly quick, kind of like with almost any other system.
Right. And it's not all on the GM, right? Like, the players do a lot of the interpretation of what, you know, the complications and whatnot are. Is that right? At least for their roles?
If you're wanting to go completely adversarial, you can have anything that benefits the players is decided by the players, and anything that benefits the GM is decided by the GM.
Oh, okay.
If you want to do that completely adversarial, you can.
Okay.
What's more fun is every group that I've run so far has someone in the at the table who is also coming up with, well, I've done this, and this would be something cool that is bad that would happen to me. And sort of come up with an entire scene that is a result of this role.
Yeah.
Yeah, the GM sort of leads into the storytelling, but after a little bit, the players pick it up and start running with it in a way that I don't think I've seen with almost any other system.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's one thing that I noticed when I was running it is, it seemed like I was doing the majority of the, oh, well, this is what this means. And I think that's why it felt a little slow and even hard as a GM, because I'm like, oh man, I got to figure all this out. But, you know, I could see, I was like, well, once we got to the point where the players are comfortable with this, like I could see them start to take some of that load on themselves and start yeah. suggesting like what could happen. And I could see that being a lot of fun.
Yeah. The easiest thing that I've had is like success, failure, that axis is so easy to figure out that it's almost, it's like rolling a D20. You have succeeded or you have failed. Done. It's okay, you've got three advantage. What are you wanting to do with this?
Right, right.
And it gets the players starting to think about it. Or I'll do a role as a GM and I've got four threat. Okay, how are you as a player group wanting to spend this four threat that you can use? And all of a sudden something bad's happening to a GM character that we get to decide. And the first time that happens, it almost blows a couple people's minds.
Yeah.
And when that happens a few times, it really starts to bring people together. And especially if they can start doing those little almost vignettes of, especially in melee combat, where, okay, I have hit and I'm knocking this guy down, but I'm doing so in such a way that he goes skittering across the floor into these boxes. It's one of those things that can be, it builds itself when everyone at the table is sort of expanding upon what the person in front of them did.
Yeah, and I think it was actually you guys on your podcast, I think probably more than once, mentioned that when you really get going in like a combat or something, that this dice mechanic actually helps it to feel like a Star Wars movie, like how there's all these like crazy things going on at once. And, you know, nothing's ever just simply like, oh, this works or it doesn't. There's always some kind of twist to it or something.
Exactly. There's always a good or bad twist to whatever you're doing. Even if it's something as simple as shooting the lock on a door, there's still something bad that can happen from it. And if the GM's wanting to add in a bit of extra difficulty, they can have a despair show up from a bad roll, and then the bridge that they're going across won't extend.
Okay.
With it, it does start bringing in everyone to the story. And in combat, the fairly freeform initiative does help that as well.
Yes, yes.
Because everyone rolls initiative, but instead of it being, well, this person got three successes and two advantage, and this person has one success and four advantage, well, the person with three successes go first. No, it's, you come up with a list of, this is a PC slot, this is an NPC slot, and whoever wants to go in the PC slot can.
Right, yeah.
And everyone gets ticked off once for the round, and then on to the next one. So it can happen where someone goes at the end of one round and the very beginning of the next one.
Oh, cool.
And it can lead into some amazing things.
So you're not locked in round to round to the order that you chose before?
No, not at all.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it makes it a fairly fun thing because one person does something and then this other person at the table gets an idea of, okay, you just did this and my guy can do this thing, so I'm going to do it. And it's like in D&D, you kind of get some of that stuff of just sort of how the battle's evolving. But when you go, you know, you have however many turns to go to until it comes around to you again. Well, with a round, it can be you going last in one and then the beginning of the next. And on top of that, you can have the effects of what you just did help out the next person to go.
Right. Cool.
So it's so much more interconnected than most other games I've seen.
Now, is the GM doing that as well with his NPC slots? Can you change those around?
Yes.
That's so cool.
So the GM can be as nice or as jerk-like as I want.
I love it.
Yeah. So if you've got a heavy hitter as a GM, you can have them go last in one session or in one round if they survive, and then go first in the next one and do, say, covering fire on the entire group, just severely hurting their major effective.
Awesome.
In some cases, even dropping them. It has a way of really evolving with how things go.
Yeah.
And that's one of the fun things. Also, combat is so brutal in the system.
Is it?
You run into a squad of stormtroopers and it's lasting 3 rounds. One of the two sides is down. Like, player groups, especially like beginner player groups, if they run into a squad or two of stormtroopers, well, one squad's okay. Two squad, they've got a very serious chance of falling over from it.
Wow.
It's a pretty brutal system.
So they're much more effective than in the movies.
Yeah, one could say that. But don't forget, they are also supposed to be the Empire's elite troops.
Right, so yeah.
They're not supposed to be that horrible.
Yeah, that was just the 70s.
And Rebels.
Yeah. One thing I just want to point out to people that aren't familiar with the system. I mean, in other games I played, like, you have failure and success. You can have critical failure or critical success. You can have degrees of failure. But with this, you can have something where you succeed, but you have like a negative consequence with that, or vice versa.
And not just that, you can have, like, in a game I was, or in a session I was running a couple weeks ago, I had someone with one success, and I think it was something in the realm of 7 threat. So they succeeded at what they were doing, but the amount of bad things that were happening because of it were astronomical. It was amazing.
That's awesome.
And thankfully I had a good group that was willing to chime in with things. That wasn't just, oh, I'm going to keep quiet so that Ben doesn't get any ideas on it. Because, yeah, you start becoming, with a group, you start becoming interested in what the story is going to bring. So the players start looking to, well, how can I get an advantage out of this bad thing that's happened? Or how can I change the landscape of things by having a bad thing happen to me? Not quite in, say, a fate thing where you're getting a fate point out of it, but it's just sort of changing the narrative that you're going through.
Okay.
Like, it's one of the few systems I've found where the narrative survives getting into combat.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Because in D&D, I'll run into combat and we all do descriptions for what we're doing, but it's really hard to keep the narrative flow of what was going on before combat started going.
Yeah.
And with this dice mechanic, it's very, there isn't a delineation between this is combat, this is not combat, because there's several things where you can have someone trying to drain strain just by essentially yelling at people in combat and have stormtroopers drop from that. It's one of those really fun things where you essentially have this character who's yelling out insults at the stormtroopers, and because the way the mechanics work out, they're taking strain, which then causes them to start essentially quaking in their boots.
Awesome. So you can actually do psychological warfare.
Yeah.
Which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where the possibilities to it are really, really huge. You do have, as players, you have 2 health pools. You've got a physical health pool and essentially a mental health pool.
Okay.
You've got wounds and strain. And wounds, if you take a blaster shot, you're having to deal with wounds. If you're taking some of these psychological ends, it's applied to strain.
Okay.
And how well things are going and how badly things are going, that can gain or inflict strain. That's one of the uses you can use for threat and advantage. And because of this, like having a bunch of threat show up, it can be really bad because it can sap strain from you.
Okay.
And if either one of those pools fall to 0, your character either falls over or becomes enfeebled in some other way where they're out of the fight and just sort of zoned out.
Yeah, and I remember the game has a pretty cool, like, critical and lasting injury system, too.
And if you were just seeing the beginner game, that one's fun and cool, but in the full system, it has you rolling D100s, and for every critical you take after the first one, it's adding 10 to the roll.
Oh, wow.
And you've got things on there where you're essentially blasting off an arm.
Like, nice.
there are some amazing things that can happen from it.
And that's how your character can ultimately die, right? Is on the critical chart.
Yeah, that is one of the very few ways that the characters can die. Because if, according to the rules, you keep tracking wounds up to your hit points below zero.
Okay.
But after that, yeah, you're already a bloody pulp on the ground anyway. Who's really going to notice otherwise? And then it becomes a discussion with the GM of, okay, I'm wanting this character to come back. How do we make this happen? Unless you have a critical roll of 150 or better, that's the only time when your character out and out dies.
Okay.
And considering you're rolling D100, you got to be pretty hurting to begin with.
Right. That's like five of those plus tens to even have a chance of getting that roll.
Yeah, and that's... You've either been doing a lot of combats without doing any sort of healing, or you've just taken a lot of hits, and you're riddled with blaster holes. So, any which way you're going out, it's going to be pretty epic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to wrap up episode 26. Once again, I want to thank Ben for joining me on the show. I had a really great time talking with him. And again, we will have the second part of the interview next week on episode 27. If you would like to check out his podcast, Tales from the Hydean Way, you can find it at madadventurers.com. You can also find it on iTunes. And you can follow Ben on Twitter at Deuterium Ice, and you can follow the Hydean Way podcast on Twitter at The Hydean Way. And I will have all this in the show notes. If you can't remember, you can head to starwalkerstudios.com and check out the show notes for episode 26 and find all this information. If you'd like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can find me on Google Plus, just search for Lex Starwalker, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Once again, please visit the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com, where you can find all of Ben's information and links to his podcast and links to his podcast on iTunes. You can find a link to our Google Plus community. Really hope you'll join us there. You can also find a link to Game Master's Journey on iTunes, and I hope you will follow that link and leave a review for the show. I'd really appreciate it. And speaking of which, I want to send a big shout out and thank you to Vampire 3 for your 5-star review on iTunes. Thank you very much. And once again, I want to thank Derek Pounds for becoming a patron of the show. And you can become a patron at patreon.com/gamemastersjourney. And finally, another great way that you can support the show, and this is especially great if you don't have any petty cash to spend, is go check out Audible Books. You can get a free 30-day trial courtesy of Game Master's Journey. Just follow the link in the show notes or head to audibletrial.com/gamemaster. And I recommended to you last week the book The Eye of the World by Robert Jordan, and you can check that book out, or pretty much any book you can think of, at least fiction books. I have yet to look for a book on Audible and have them not have it. So Audible is really great, and you can try it for free and support the show. And I really appreciate it. So until next week, I hope that you enjoy some role-playing goodness and either play or run the game of your choice. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.